Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 92.
Okay, so where do we take off? Kong Ming's arrived.
Yeah, he's marched the army to Mianyang. But before they even talk battle plans, there's this really nice touch.
Oh, the Ma Chao thing?
Exactly. He has Ma Dai lead the mourning, and Kong Ming personally offers sacrifices at Ma Chao's tomb. It's about respect, legacy, setting the tone.
A good reminder of what they're fighting for before the fighting starts.
Precisely. And the enemy, Wei. Led by, let's just say, not their A-team commander.
Xiahou Mao, the emperor's son-in-law. Young, not much experience.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit spoiled.
That's the picture we get.
Ah.
Definitely untested.
Yeah.
Which sets up this first big strategic debate.
Okay, let's unpack this because it's huge for the whole campaign. Before any swords are drawn, there's this fundamental disagreement. Wei Yan steps up.
Yeah, Wei Yan, the veteran. And his plan is, well, it's bold. Really bold, high risk, high reward stuff.
He's basically saying, look, we're outnumbered. Our only edge is surprise.
Exactly. Forget the main roads. He wants to use the Ziwu Valley.
Which is notoriously difficult terrain, right?
Yeah.
Barely a path.
Oh, treacherous. It's a shortcut through the Quinling Mountains. Super narrow, winding, totally reliant on good weather and, well, luck.
And his plan is to take 5,000 elite soldiers.
Just 5,000, yeah.
Right.
March them through this nightmare route, pop out near Ancheng, behind enemy lines in, what was it, 10 days?
10 days. It sounds insane. But the payoff.
The payoff, if it worked, was potentially enormous. The idea was Xiahou Mao, the Green Commander, would totally panic seeing troops appear from nowhere.
He'd flee the way defense collapses.
And Kong Ming marches up the main Xi Valley route, scoops up all the territory west of Xianyang. Game over, almost before it begins.
Yeah.
One swift campaign.
It would have been incredible. The fastest victory imaginable, maybe.
Could have been. But, you know, it all hangs on threads.
Yeah.
Xiahou Mao panicking, perfect logistics in impossible terrain, and crucially, no ambushes.
And this is where Kong Ming slams on the brakes hard.
Right. She shuts it down, calls it not a foolproof plan, no debate.
Now, okay, here's where I always wonder. Wasn't Wei Yan kind of right? Wasn't the whole point to hit Wei fast before they dug in? Kong Ming's choice basically guaranteed a long, grinding war.
That's the eternal Kong Ming question, isn't it? He's always weighing the odds, always looking at the resource difference. Xu just cannot afford to lose 5,000 elite troops.
He's worried about the what if. What if Wei isn't incompetent?
Precisely. What if they have good men, as he puts it? Any decent general would see the Ziwu Valley route, set a trap, and just annihilate those 5,000 soldiers.
And the morale hit from that would be devastating, maybe campaign ending.
Exactly. So for Kong Ming, a slow grinding win is better than risking a quick catastrophic loss.
So he insists on the main road, the flat main road through Longyu.
Yep. Minimize risk, control the variables. It's pure Kong Ming. But the text is clear, Wei Yan is not happy.
He thinks it's too slow, gives way too much time.
He believes it guarantees prolonged delay, playing right into Wei's numerical advantage. It's a real point of friction right at the start.
Okay, so, caution wins the day. The strategy is set. Take the main road. And who do you send first to test the waters and boost morale?
Well, you send your most famous, most reliable hero, don't you? General Zhao Yun.
The living legend himself, even though he's getting on a bit by this point.
He is. But Kong Ming needs that initial success, maybe partly to show everyone, see, the safe plan works too.
But Wei doesn't exactly roll out the welcome mat. Their vanguard sounds pretty tough.
Oh, yeah. Han Dei, a respected general from Ziliang, known for his mountain-splitting axe. And he's got 80,000 Qiang soldiers with him.
And the family factor. He brings his sons.
All four of them. Han Ying, Han Yao, Han Qiong, Han Ban. It's like something out of an epic setting up this incredible showdown.
So Fengming Mountain, the battle kicks off.
Yeah.
And Zhao Yun. Wow.
Just explodes onto the scene. The text says he engages the eldest son, Han Ying, and kills him in less than three bouts.
Less than three. At nearly 70. Still got it.
Hasn't lost a step, apparently. But then he gets hairy fast.
The other three sons attack him together.
Yep.
They surround him. One old warrior against three younger generals, all presumably skilled fighters.
How does he handle that?
The description is amazing. Pure skill and grit. He takes down Han Ki fairly quickly. But then Han Kong tries archery. Fires three arrows fast.
And Zhao Yun.
Deflects all three with his spear shaft.
Yeah.
Just bats them away, which is just insane skill.
That's unbelievable.
And then instantly, Zhao Yun draws his own bow, fires back, and nails Han Kong right in the face. Kills him on the spot.
Jeez. One arrow. So two sons down.
And he finishes by capturing the second son, Han Yao, alive. takes him prisoner. So in minutes, he's dealt with all four brothers and their father's elite guard essentially by himself.
That's why he's Zhao Yun, right? The Dragon of Changban.
Exactly. And the source even includes that famous poem, doesn't it? Old Zhao Zicheng, nearing 70, performed extraordinary feats, still like the hero of Changban. He's done the impossible again.
But why? What's driving him? We get that conversation with Deng Zi, right?
We do. Deng Zi is full of praise, calls it a rare achievement for a man his age.
And Zhao Yun's response is fascinating. He basically says, I did it because the prime minister thought I was too old.
Yeah. He says Kong Wing considered him past it, and he needed to express himself, prove he still had it.
Is that wise, though? I mean, it's incredible bravery, but is it smart for a general leading the vanguard to be fighting with something to prove personally?
That's the edge, isn't it? It speaks volumes about his pride, his sense of honor. But maybe it hints at a lack of that cold calculation Kong Ming values. He's fighting for his reputation as much as for Xu.
And that pride, that need to prove himself, leads right into the next problem.
It does. Yeah. Because after dealing with the sons, he meets the father, Han Dei, in the next fight.
Yeah.
And kills him in less than three bouts, too. Just unstoppable.
So Sha Humao, the Wei commander, must be absolutely panicking now.
Totally terrified. Right. He asks for advice. And this is where Wei finally plays it smart.
They bring in a strategist.
Cheng Wu, son of the famous Cheng Yu. And he immediately spots Zhao Yun's vulnerability. His bravery. Cheng Wu judges him brave but lacking strategy. He sees that Zhao Yun's confidence, maybe that need to express himself, makes him predictable.
So they set a trap based on his likely reaction.
Exactly. A classic feigned retreat. Xie Hu Mao pretends to be beaten, lures Zhao Yun forward.
Wow.
While setting up two huge ambushes. 30,000 troops on the left under Dong Xi, 30,000 on the right under Xu Ze, waiting.
And Deng Zhi warns Zhao Yun, doesn't he? Says it looks fishy.
He does. Urges caution. But Zhao Yun, flushed with victory, basically laughs it off, calls Xie Hu Mao a milk-smelling child, and charges right after him.
Straight into the trap. His pride makes him ignore the warning.
Completely. He rides deep into the pass, the trap springs, and suddenly he's surrounded, utterly encircled.
And the source gives that brutal time frame, fighting from morning till evening.
Yeah, from Chenxi about 7 a.m. all the way to Yuxi around 7 p.m. 12 solid hours of combat. Surrounded, exhausted, can't break out.
Just relentless pressure.
He can even see Xie Hu Mao up on a slope, watching, directing the siege. Humiliating. The text says he's basically resigned to dying, just waiting for the moon so he can make one last desperate charge.
Wow. The great hero brought so low. It raises that question again, though. If Kong Ming is Mr. Cautious, how did he let his best veteran walk into this?
But maybe he didn't entirely let him. Maybe caution also means planning for your own side's mistakes.
You mean backup.
Exactly. Just when it looks like the end, just as Wei closes in for the kill, help arrives.
Kong Ming anticipated this. He knew Zhao Yun might overreach.
It seems so. It wasn't just luck. Kong Ming had already dispatched reinforcements. And who does he send?
The next generation. Zheng Bao, Zhang Fei's son, and Guan Xing, Guan Yu's son.
The heirs of legends, riding to save the legend, each with 5,000 troops. It's perfect symmetry, foresight, not just reaction.
And they hit hard.
Oh, yeah. They smash into the ambush forces. Zhang Bao kills Zi Zhe, Guan Xing kills Dong Xi. The two ambush commanders are taken out, the encirclement broken, just like that.
Incredible. The young guard rescuing the old guard.
And that rescue seems to re-energize Zhao Yun, too. Seeing these young guys, his nephews as he calls them, fighting so fiercely for him, it lights another fire under him.
He doesn't just feel relieved, he feels motivated.
Yeah, there's that great quote, isn't there? He sees their effort and says something like, "They are my nephews, yet they strive for glory. Should I, a senior general, not do the same?"
Wow. So instead of thinking, "Phew, I can rest now," he's thinking, "I need to match their fire."
Exactly. He rededicates himself right then and there, resolving to risk his old life for the cause, for the late emperor. His worth isn't diminished. He proves it again.
So the three of them together, Zhao Yun, Zhang Bao, Guan Xing, they turn the tables.
Completely. They rout the remaining Wei forces. Xiao Hu Mao barely escapes, fleeing the Nanan Commandery with like 100 guards. Total collapse for Wei's initial defense.
So a massive victory in the field then.
Yeah.
But the immediate objective.
That's the slightly anticlimactic part. Zhao Yun, Zhang Bao, and Guan Xing follow Xiao Mao and lay siege to Nanan. Deng Zhi joins them.
But they can't take the city.
Nope. 10 days, the text says, and they can't break through the walls. Zhu Jiliang, Kong Ming, leading his Xu forces north.
Yeah.
But he immediately hits this snag, this fortress city. Nanan.
Right. And our sources, they paint a picture, don't they? Deep moat, high walls, basically not easy to attack. Standard impenetrable fortress stuff.
It's a classic military problem, really. A stalemate. If Kongming just sits there besieging it, well, he's burning daylight, resources, and his supply lines are hanging out there.
But Anan wasn't just the city. There was a big prize inside.
Oh, huge. Xiao Mao. Not just the Wei commander there, but he was the emperor's son-in-law, the Fuma. Capturing him, that's massive.
Yeah, capturing the Fuma, that goes way beyond just taking a commander off the board, doesn't it?
Totally. It's a political earthquake.
Yeah.
I think Deng Zhi put it best, actually. He said, capturing this one guy, it's like a victory worth 100 generals. Think of the propaganda value, the hit to Wei morale.
Okay. So Kongming sees this. He knows a long siege is a bad idea, but the prize is too tempting. What's the move?
Well, the sources are clear. He realized pretty fast the real objective maybe wasn't Nanan itself. Not directly, anyway. It was the support network around it, Tian Sui and Anding.
Ah, cut off the support.
Exactly. So what we're diving into today is how he planned to take all three cities, essentially, using layers of deception. Almost no direct fighting, if you can help it.
Okay, let's unpack this. The Nanan siege quickly turns into a masterclass in misdirection. Yeah. How do you even start to convince enemy cities to just, well, walk out and leave themselves open?
It begins by creating this illusion of absolute total desperation at Nanan. Kongming gets his top generals together, you know, Zhao Yun, Deng Zhi, Guanxing, Zhang Bao, and gives them these very specific, very sneaky instructions.
Aimed at the neighbor.
Yep. Focus first on Anding, where Kuiliang is governor, and Tianshui under Ma Zun. The idea is to play on their sense of duty, their instinct to help a fellow Wei commander.
And the first step is sending someone in, like a spy.
Sort of, but more dramatic. He uses a trusted military officer, someone loyal to Xu, sends him in disguise. This guy pretends to be a Wei general named Pei Xu. Nobody famous, just a loyal officer.
Okay.
And the story he tells is intense. He claims he literally slain out of the heavy siege at Nanan. Picture this.
Yeah.
He shows up, maybe bloodied, definitely exhausted, practically begging for help.
Wow. So you're not just getting a message. You're seeing the desperation firsthand. That's powerful.
Exactly. And he's got proof, supposedly.
Yeah.
A sweat-soaked official document. And he tells them Nanan is setting signal fires every day. It's about to fall any minute. It's pure psychological pressure engineered to force a quick reaction.
And Kuiliang over in Anding, he just buys it.
Hook, line, and sinker. Takes the document. Probably doesn't even question it too hard given the drama. He panics, raises maybe 4,000 troops, and immediately marches towards Nanan.
Leaving Anding wide open.
Well, not quite wide open, but crucially, only with civilian officials left in charge. He makes that fatal mistake.
Because Kongming didn't actually want the 4,000 troops.
Nope. He wanted the city.
Hmm.
So Kuiliang is riding out, probably thinking about being the hero who saves Yahu Mao, watching for those distant fires.
And then the trap springs?
Right when he's still miles away from Nanan. First layer activates. Guanjing smashes into his front line, locks the road. Then Zhang Bao hits him from behind.
Chaos.
Total chaos. These Anding troops, they weren't expecting a fight. They were on a rescue mission. They just scatter. Kuiliang realizes he's been had, manages to scrape together maybe 100 guys, and bolts back towards Anding.
Thinking he can get back behind his own walls.
The only place he thinks is safe. But imagine that ride back, the panic setting in. Realizing the trap wasn't just out there, it might already be.
Inside his own city.
He gets to the moat, looks up, and suddenly arrows are raining down on him from his own walls.
No.
Wei Yan. Remember those secret instructions Kongming gave out earlier? Wei Yan had slipped into Anding under cover of darkness, disguised as one of Kuiliang's own soldiers. He took the gates before Kuiliang even got ambushed.
So while Kuiliang is marching out, Wei Yan is marching in.
Precisely. Wei Yan shouts down from the walls, "City's taken!" And just like that, Anding falls. No siege engines, no big battle, just deception.
That is incredibly efficient. Ruthless, almost.
One city down. And now Kongming has Kuiliang, desperate, army gone, city gone. He's got no choice but to go to Kongming's camp and surrender.
Okay, so the military trick worked. Now what? Does Kongming just throw him in chains?
Yeah, that's the fascinating next step.
No, he doesn't.
He treats Kuiliang like a distinguished guest. Shangbin. Rolls out the red carpet, basically.
Why? Why be so polite to the enemy governor you just tricked?
Because Kongming wasn't done with him yet. He needed Kuiliang for the next layer of the plan. This moves from military tactics to pure psychological manipulation.
He's going
to
use Kuiliang.
Exactly. He gives Kuiliang this golden opportunity to prove his newfound, totally fake, loyalty. Go back to Nanan, he says. convince Governor Yang Ling, who happens to be related to a respected Wei official, Yang Fu, adding a layer of credibility, convince him to defect. Together, you can capture Shahu Mao from the inside.
Whoa, that's asking a lot. You're asking him to betray his own side, his own people, just after you captured him.
It's a huge ask. But the sources say Kui Liang agrees almost instantly. Just like that. His only request, can you pull your armies back 20 li, just to make it look convincing.
And Kong Ming agrees to that, pulls his forces back.
He does. It makes the whole thing look more plausible to Nanan. So Kui Liang rides in Nanan, meets Yang Ling.
And does he actually try to convince him?
Oh, they conspire, all right. But not the way Kong Ming suggested. They immediately decide to execute the counterplan. It's called Jiangji Juji, basically. Turn the enemy's trick back on them.
A double cross.
Exactly. They think they fooled Kong Ming. Kui Liang will pretend he's defecting. He'll lead a small force into the city. And crucially, he'll bring those two top Shu generals, Guan Xing and Zhang Bao, with him as proof of his success.
Luring them inside.
Right into the governor's residence. Once they're inside, boom. Execute Guan Xing and Zhang Bao. Then raise a fire signal, the one Kong Ming is expecting, as the sign of success. Lure Kong Ming himself into the city and capture the mastermind.
Okay, hold on. This feels incredibly risky for Kong Ming. He's sending Guan Xing and Zhang Bao, two of his absolute best guys, sons of legends, into a city he knows is hostile, based entirely on his read of Kui Liang. What if he misread him? What if Kui Liang was actually loyal for a second?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And that's where you see Kong Ming's, well, his terrifying confidence, maybe. Was it reckless? Maybe. But he believed he wasn't gambling.
How could it be so sure?
Because he'd already given Guan Xing and Zhang Bao secret instructions on what to do before they even set foot near Nanan's gates. He wasn't testing Kui Lian's loyalty. He was using Kui Lian's expected treachery.
So the double cross was part of Kong Ming's plan all along.
It seems so. He anticipated it. So as they all arrive at the gate, Kui Liang, Guan Xing, Zhang Bao Kui Liang does this sneaky move, shoots a little hidden arrow up to Yang Ling on the wall. It's got a note attached, detailing their plan to kill the Shu generals inside.
He thinks he's being clever.
Thinks he's confirming the trap is set.
Yeah.
Yang Ling gets the note, comes down from the wall, all smiles, ready to welcome them in and spring the trap.
Oh, nut.
But before the pleasantries are even done, before the inner gates are maybe even secured, Guan Xing just draws his sword and cuts Yang Ling down. Instantly.
What? Just like that?
Just like that. The counter plan executed in a flash.
And Kui Liang, he must have realized.
Oh, yeah. Pure panic. He sees Yang Ling fall, realizes Kong Ming knew everything, and he just turns and runs to the drawbridge.
Does he make it?
Nope. Zhang Bao is right on him. Yells something like, "You rogue! Did you think your trick could fool the chancellor?" And then skewers him with his spear. It's brutal. Guan Xing immediately lights the fire signal. Not the signal Kui Liang planned to lure Kong Ming into a trap, but the real signal. The signal for the main Shu army, waiting just outside those 20 Lang, to pour into the now leaderless city.
So Nanan falls. Just instantly.
Instantly. Shao Mao is captured alive. Wang Ping gets him. Complete victory. And it all hinged on Kong Ming predicting that Kui Liang would try to double-cross him.
We have to come back to that core question, though. How did he know? Not just suspect, but know enough to risk Guan Xing and Zhang Bao. This is the key insight, right? For you listening.
It really is. And Deng Ji, one of his own guys, asked him the exact same thing right after the battle. Like, how did you know he wasn't really surrendering?
Kong Ming's answer?
It's pure psychological profiling. Kong Ming apparently explained that he knew Kui Liang had no intention of surrendering U Guan Xing. He deliberately set that bait, asking him to go back and betray Nanan.
Okay, but what was the tell? What gave the lie away?
It was Kui Liang's reaction. Kong Ming argued, basically, that if Kui Liang had genuinely switched sides, if he was truly loyal to Shu now, he would have hesitated. He would have pushed back.
How so?
He would have said, "Whoa, Chancellor, hold on. Bringing two of your best generals into a heavily fortified Wei city? Even if I promise to defect, that's incredibly dangerous for them. What if something goes wrong?" A truly loyal person would have worried about the risk to Guan Xing and Zhang Bao.
They would have tried to protect the Shu generals.
Exactly. But Kui Liang, he happily agreed. The word used is Jinran. Like, cheerfully, readily agreed to take them into the heart of danger. That immediate, unconcerned willingness, that's what told Kong Ming he was already plotting to kill them inside. His eagerness was the proof of his treachery.
That is chillingly brilliant. Wow. So the whole elaborate setup, the fake distress call, the ambush, letting Kui Liang surrender, treating him well, asking him to defect. It was all designed to lead Kui Liang down a path where his predictable attempt at a double cross would be the very thing that opened the city gates.
You got it. He wasn't trying to earn Kui Liang's loyalty. He was banking on his disloyalty. Using the enemy's own perceived cunning against them, they defeated themselves, in a way.
Incredible. Okay, so Nanan and Anding are down, but what about Tianshui? While all this drama was happening, Ma Zun, the governor there, he got the same fake messages, right?
He did. Same fake Peizhu messenger, same story about Nan being desperate, and then likely a follow-up saying, hey, Anding is already on the way. Ma Zun was totally convinced. He was literally gathering his troops, getting ready to march out and be the hero.
He was about to walk into the exact same trap Kui Liang did.
Moments away from it, leaving Kan Chui just as vulnerable. But then someone stops him. A local officer steps up, Jiang Wei, styled Bo Yu.
Ah, Jiang Wei. This is his entrance.
And what an entrance. The sources make a point of telling us about him. He's extensively read many books, thoroughly versed in military strategy and martial arts, Bingfui Wusuo Butong. Basically, smart and skilled.
So not just another official, he thinks differently.
Critically differently. And this is maybe the biggest takeaway for you listening today. Jiang Wei immediately questions the source material. He doesn't just accept the dramatic story.
He applies critical thinking. What did he pick up on?
Two specific things. Two logical holes that everyone else, including Ma Zun, had missed. First, he asked the obvious question.
Yeah.
If Nanan is under such a heavy, watertight siege, how on earth did any messenger get out, let alone some random officer called Peizhu? The story itself doesn't make sense.
Right. If the siege is real, the messenger probably isn't.
Exactly. Simple logic. Second, he points out that the follow-up messenger, the one saying Anding had already left, that guy apparently had no official paperwork, no proper documentation. That's just not how military communication works. Highly suspicious.
So he's looking at the procedure, the logistics, not just the emotional appeal.
Precisely. He concludes, correctly, these messengers must be Shu officers in disguise. And the whole point is to lure Ma Zun out so Kang Ming can grab Tian Shui easily. He saw right through the entire feint.
Wow. He's operating on Kang Ming's level here, anticipating the deception.
Ma Zun gets it instantly. He basically says, whoa, if it wasn't for you, Bo Yu, I would have fallen right into that trap. Jiang Wei literally saved Tian Shui with just a few skeptical questions.
And the story doesn't even stop there, does it? Jiang Wei doesn't just say, don't go.
No. This is the kicker. He doesn't just foil Kang Ming's plan. He immediately says, actually, I have a counter plan. We can use this situation to capture Zhu Liang himself.
He's going on the offensive against Kang Ming.
Right away. The sources end this section of this amazing line, something like, strategy has been its match. Wisdom has encountered its rival. The whole dynamic of the campaign just flipped on its head.